Good morning again, folks. We'll be starting. Our next speaker is Stefan Mueller, who I have the pleasure of introducing. I've known Stefan for quite some time. He's a consultant for AdSec Information Security in Germany, and he has done a lot of things. He works on both FIPS 140 and Common Criteria, plus consulting on other security products, security standards and such. He's also worked extensively with open source and with Linux. And I think you're going to really enjoy this talk. It's about random numbers.
Okay. And I would like to pick up where Valerie just left off with her DefRandom talk. And I would like to talk about actually DefUrandom. As Valerie mentioned, DefUrandom is typically liked by most developers since it is non-blocking. However, NIST... NIST and other certification bodies, they don't like DefUrandom. And let's have a look into that, why it is not liked, and maybe we find a way how to use it in the right way. Okay, my talk is headed with using Linux DefRandom the right way. Well, I hope we find the right way, if there is any. Okay, what do I want to talk about first? My talk is of course targeted and geared to NIST and FIPS 140, but I think it is relevant for almost all developers because the problems that I try to raise here are technical in nature and really need to be addressed by any kind of cryptographic implementation that tries to seed itself from DefUrandom. Nonetheless, I first want to talk a little bit about status quo. What is NIST requiring? What does NIST want from us and from a module that seeds from DefUrandom or from a noise source? And I'd like then to show what are the real problems in DefUrandom? Why isn't that nobody really likes it out of the NIST realm or out of other governmental realms? And knowing that, what the problems are, maybe we find a way how to use DefRandom in a sane and safe manner. Up to this third bullet, I'm just trying about what is right now. So you can use DefRandom with the current code base that you have in the Linux kernel. And however, recently there are a number of developments that you may want to know about because they touch upon that very subject. And also go into the direction that Valerie just mentioned in the talk before me. Is there a way potentially that we can also make NIST happy by using a DRBG insight or as a post-processor for DefRandom? But let's go back and check a little bit on the status quo with NIST. What does NIST want from us? Lately, or I think it was mid of last year, NIST came out with a new implementation guide, the IG 7.15, that kind of writes down and clarifies what requirements are to be met by a FIPS 140 validation when using entropy sources. First of all, it requires an entropy assessment report. I think that makes sense. So, and as part of that entropy assessment report, you need to provide the design of your noise source. In our case, if we want to use DefUrandom, we need to provide a design description of DefUrandom. Okay, I do not have one right with me here on the screens, on the slides, but I think if you would go and look a little bit in the internet, there are several descriptions, even very detailed descriptions of how DefUrandom works, and I would personally think that either one of them that you find in there will be sufficient to cover the NIST requirements. But now the interesting part starts. NIST also requires a demonstration that we have initial entropy. And I think here we hit the first topic where DefRandom may fall short because as we all know, DefUrandom is non-blocking. If you boot up your system and you request bits from DefUrandom, you will get it right away. You have no idea how much it is seeded or how much entropy it was fed into DefUrandom at the time you pull from it. So this demonstration is going to be interesting. And secondly, you need to describe your overall entropy behavior. And I've just pointed out here the seeding versus non-reseeding with new entropy. What do I mean with that? Well, let's assume you use defu random. It has been appropriately seeded during boot time with, just for the sake of argument, 128-bit of entropy. And it will not be seeded thereafter. This, just for the sake of discussion, this scenario is not too much unlikely, especially in server or virtualized environments, because entropy, at least the way that defu random collects it, is scarce in server-type headless systems. So, for the discussion, we are seeded with 128-bit of entropy. We pull we want to generate, say, an AES key 256-bit in length. We pull twice 128 bits from defu random. So what do we have? How much entropy do we have in that data, in these 256 bits that we just read? Is it twice 128 bits of entropy? I guess not, because you have not been reseeded freshly. So what you have, you still have 128 bits of entropy. You just need to be aware of that when you use defu random. Conversely, if you use def random, which requires to seed itself during these pulls, you can say you have 256 bits of entropy when you collect it twice 128 bits and concatenate them. But now let's go into the details. Why is defu random not loved? I just provided two small snapshots out of two test systems. One is executing within a KVM, just a virtual environment, and you have a minimal guest. You do not have too many devices there, not too many interrupts coming in, whatnot, but yet it is headless, and no human interface devices are attached, just typical server-type environment in a cloud deployment, you could say. So what do you see here? First, the boot sequence is completed after about 2 seconds on my test systems. That means the boot sequence of the entire system, including kernel, including userland. That userland, well, is just starting up one daemon. For the fun of it, it is just OpenSSH, but still, you're done after 2 seconds. So if you look into the kernel boot log and you wait a little bit, you see two interesting statements that I just copied out here. Before I go into these statements, these numbers that you see at the beginning of those statements is the time in seconds. The first statement, after about a half a second after starting the machine, the kernel takes over, and the first user space process tries to pull from defu random. And it's very nice that this code of def random and defu random kind of prints out a log, a warning log, indicating first who is that, and secondly how many bits of entropy defu random or def random thinks it has collected at the dead point. Okay, the first user space process is our beloved init process. In more recent Linux distributions, it's replaced with systemd. But here you see systemd tries to read defu random, and defu random thinks it is seeded with only 3 bits of entropy. So if this is going to be our, whatever, secure crypto module, well, 3 bits of entropy, probably not really good. So there's a second log entry that is printed by random and defu random, and that's this second line. The non-blocking pool is initialized. Okay, that is only printed with Linux kernel 3.14 and higher, but what does it mean? And by the way, it is printed only 33 seconds after boot. I even have seen it 50, 60, 70 seconds after boot in some scenarios, which means only after these 30, 40, 50 seconds of the boot, something is initialized. But what is that? During boot time, the Linux kernel is implemented such that all noise that it collects, it feeds directly into that non-blocking pool. For those who may not be too much into the details of def random and defu random, the non-blocking pool is kind of the deterministic part that feeds directly defu random. Yeah. So, and somehow it needs to obtain entropy, and that entropy that is collected, as Valerie mentioned this morning, from disks, human interface devices, and interrupts, is fed directly into that non-blocking pool, and that line that the non-blocking pool is initialized prints out after about 128 bits of entropy is assumed to be collected. Okay, so 128 bits of entropy after 33 seconds. Here we have our big problem, because let's face it, a lot of crypto applications are kind of daemons, let's say, SSH daemon, be it a TLS daemon, whatever. They are started during startup time. We've seen 2 seconds is a startup time. After 33 seconds, we only have an initialized non-blocking pool. Okay, there is a big disconnect. And here is the key problem. On a bare metal system, I redid that test. Okay, my boot sequence is 25 seconds. I have many more daemons. I have X11 and whatnot. So that's why it's a little bit longer. Doesn't matter. But here you see again, after 0.7 seconds, user space, the first user space process tries to read. And the non-blocking pool is initialized after about 6 seconds in my test environment. Yet, that is in the middle of the user space boot process, and I'm really not sure, I cannot really measure that, whether if I have an SSH daemon, a TLS daemon or whatnot, who is initialized at that time. Whether it is seeded before or after that non-blocking pool is initialized. And here is the key problem. Again, remember, IG715 requires a demonstration that the noise source is appropriately seeded or we have an appropriate entropy. And here we see we do not. So this is what we have to that we are currently facing, but there are ways how to circumvent that. Okay, now let's use DevViewRandom. There are ways to do that. And one of the first ways to do that is that getRandom system call. That is new to the Linux kernel. Yes, it is only there in more recent kernels, like 3.19, I think it was added. But what is the difference to DevViewRandom? First of all, at runtime, there is none. It acts exactly as DevViewRandom. It is non-blocking. It just works the same way. But the key difference is at startup time, it blocks. It blocks until this non-blocking pool is seeded with 128 bits. So if you do use your getRandom system call in my virtualized environment, in my KVM environment, and you start your open SSH daemon using that system call, your SSH daemon will only become available after, say, this 30 seconds or 40 seconds after boot. And I think when you use the getRandom system call, then you're in business. Then we have covered that one key requirement from NIST that we have a seeded or an appropriately seeded noise source. One example. As we know, or as I just mentioned, getRandom is fairly new, and people tend to have older kernels. There's another possibility. You can pull that one file that I mentioned here. Why is that okay? That file lists the entropy content, the assumed entropy content in this so-called input pool. Again, for folks who may not know DevRandom, the input pool is the actual big collector for all the entropy, and where the, for example, the non-blocking pool tries to feed itself from. So, as I mentioned, during boot process, the entropy is fed directly into the non-blocking pool, meaning that the input pool will have zero entropy up to the time when the non-blocking pool is considered to be seeded with 128 bits, because then the focus will shift back to the input pool. Any new entropy that comes in will be fed into the input pool, and this entropy avail file will start showing values greater than zero. That means the non-blocking pool is seeded at the time this file starts to rise above zero. So why not using it? So pull it. If you want to have it synchronous, you can install an alarm to make it an asynchronous pull. So there are various ways, but maybe that's another option. And here again, you can demonstrate that if you use that, DevViewRandom has been appropriately seeded at the time you start reading from it. I want to caution you again, that is only applicable up to 3.14. If you have a kernel that is older than that, you are left to your own devices at this point. I'm sorry. I mean, there are ways, but they are very convoluted, so it's challenging. Okay, so we have seen how devurandom currently can be used, and I would like to now look a little bit into the future on how, or first of all, I want to give you an example on how devrandom really can be used in a way that devurandom can be used such that you still provide early services, yet you can ensure that you are appropriately seeded. And one of these examples is actually inside the kernel, the DRBG itself. The DRBG is just a random number generator that can be used by anybody who is interested in. But of course, it also needs to be seeded. It is seeded with the in-kernel equivalent of devurandom. But again, it suffers from the same problem. So what can you do? So first, it installs a callback with the devurandom handler that is triggered when that non-blocking pool is seeded. If you do a user space, again, set the trigger point when you know that the non-blocking pool is seeded. Seeded with another available entropy source, if you have one, inside the kernel, we do have one which is used here, that jitter-RNG. plus any data that we currently have available at devurandom. The SP890A now, we know, has the reseed threshold that requires an automated reseeding after when you hit that threshold. Now, since we are at least considering that DRBG to be still in a kind of a degraded state, it is not fully seeded, but yet seeded with a reasonable degree of entropy, it is that reseed threshold is set to 50. That means after 50 pulls, it tries to reseed again with the same approach, jitter-RNG plus what you have in devurandom. And once the callback is triggered from devurandom that it is appropriately seeded, the DRBG tries to seed itself again, and then everything is good. The threshold is set back to the default value, and we're good to go. Okay, that is just inside the kernel. That DRBG with this kind of description is also available from user space with that library that I just mentioned here, the libkc API. Maybe that is also of help to you. So just use that library, try to use that DRBG, and you should be good as well. That is the current status. So what is the future? There are future developments that just happened over the last couple of months. There's a new approach being proposed, what is called the Linux Random Number Generator, which is kind of a complete replacement of the current Linux devrandom and devurandom implementation. It is ABI and API compatible to this legacy implementation. It replaces the non-blocking and the blocking pool with an SP890A DRBG. Here, at compile time, you can select which one you want. Per default, it's the HMAC SHA-256. The good thing is, or the interesting thing is, it uses the kernel crypto API. That means you also have the accelerated crypto implementations, if they are available, at least at your disposal. And this LRNG tries to mimic a little bit a seeding that is following the lead of SP890B, C, and other governmental standards. So it tries first to seed itself with 112 bits of entropy, and then again with 256 bits. And the current way how it is done after gazillions of tests on virtual environments as well as real environments shows that 112 bits, will be seeded way before user space starts, and 256 bits are injected into the DRBG before even the init RAMFS terminates. Again, what is init RAMFS? I mean, that's the first stage of a Linux user space boot where You try to find your root file system, make some housekeeping work, but it is yet before the real user space with your real daemon starts. In addition, there are also some user space Boolean values, like the minimally seeded and fully seeded Booleans that indicate whether it has been seeded with 112 or 256 bits. So you could also, in theory, use that one too to control your module. The code is completely implemented, completely there. We have an entropy assessment report, and there are also test cases for the entropy measurement out there for the use. I'm not sure whether you will find it in the upstream Linux kernel anytime soon, because of the next slide. Stirred by these patches around, or these new developments around this LRNG, Ted Cho, the author and maintainer of the current defrandom and defurandom implementation inside the Linux kernel, created a patch set of his own. He completely replaces the non-blocking pool with ChaCha 20. And so first of all, that non-blocking pool is now using a little bit more of a up-to-the-art cryptographic post-processing. But the key statement is the second bullet, the second sub-bullet. Defurandom now with a new implementation blocks like at random. That means it, when you pull from it, you know that your ChaCha 20 in this case has been seeded with 128 bits of entropy. Though, when you trust it, you will see that it will not seed, or you will not, it will not release the lock, the block after 30 seconds, but you still get seeded, or your block will release very fast. Because also these patches show or implement, re-implement the way how entropy is collected a little bit, at least at startup time. In addition, ChaCha 20 is now a fully deterministic RNG with a time-based reseeding. There's no other way of reseeding it. It's just time-based, 5 minutes. And as I mentioned, the interrupt handling during boot is changed, which means that it is fast to seed it with entropy. We can take that a little bit offline if somebody's interested. The challenging there is a challenging link between the noise sources and the non-blocking pool, which is mathematically problematic, let's call it this way, and that link has now been removed with that patch. Yet there are still some issues that yet need to be addressed. I expect that new patch to go into the 4.7 kernel release cycle that is currently starting. I could expect that this one will show up, this one currently will be the one, the way forward, where the previous one, that LRNG approach that I demonstrated, will, at least as of now, will not make its way into the kernel. But time will tell. Okay, what have we seen? Defurandom, we know, is a challenge to use, and I think NIST is right when they say, you have to demonstrate to us why defurandom is okay. I think I provided some ideas on how defurandom can be used. And with those ideas, with those approaches, you may convince NIST that defurandom is good after all, when you kind of follow them. Okay, these are my closing remarks. Oh, and by the way, yes, we have not talked about this entropy heuristic in the Linux defrandom implementation, which is a complete separate topic where it totally underestimates the available entropy, and therefore the way the entropy heuristic works currently in the kernel should be overhauled as well. I try to contact Ted Cho and work with him. I mean, currently I'm in contact with him, and maybe let's see what we can do about that one too. Okay, that's it about my presentation. Are there any questions about defrandom or defurandom?
So if you add up linearly that, oh, we've got this percentage that you will, it says we've got 2% you will add 2. And then Peter Andin changed it to kind of Shannon clump, so it's asymptotically approached.
Yeah.
So has that changed, or is it still doing that?
It's everything, it's the same. And this entire approach...
I mean entropy estimates. So if you're trying to use that in your...
Yeah.
So you've got a library and you're trying to say, oh, I've got this much entropy from the kernel. It's not min entropy, so you need to be aware of that when you do your...
Right, but on the other hand, the way how you come about the first value, how much entropy is one event, that approach is completely, magic. Let's call it this way. I mean, it has nothing to do with reality, and that is what I'm trying to convince Ted Cho to kind of get rid of.
So the other question is a bit more wide. Why put DRBG in the kernel? If I'm an application running on a platform that I'm trying to get FIPS certified, why put the DRBG in the kernel? Why not have my local instance and use the kernel to get entropy?
Absolutely, I'm totally with you.
Because then all these issues of, well, is the kernel doing it right, is...
Okay, I mean, maybe a short answer is, unfortunately, we do not have a microkernel. We have a big kernel, and that big kernel requires entropy in itself. So it uses also random numbers for security-relevant purposes. IPsec comes to mind. And for that, if you want to be FIPSified, then you need to have a DRBG inside the kernel. That is the reason why the DRBG popped up in the kernel in the first place, unfortunately. So, yes, but I'm with you. I would love to have a microkernel, but we are not there.
We're actually out of time. The session's over. Please enjoy the break across the hall for 30 minutes. But since this is such an interesting topic, please feel free to speak up.
All right, well, I'll take my time to ask the following question.
Sure.
So in this instance, we're sort of relying upon the kernel's entropy assessment, which you sort of asserted, and I think I agree, sort of dubious. But in addition, there on a lot of architectures, it completely ignores a possible seeding possibility. For example, if you're using a reasonably modern Intel CPU, then RDRAND and RDSeed are sort of automatically integrated to the pool, but have absolutely no entropy assessed associated with that. Well, that may or may not be a reasonable choice, but it's an interesting thing to note that if you're interested in proceeding forward with FIPS validation, that if you're on one of these architectures, that's a possibly ready source of claimable entropy.
I'm totally with you, and I mean, let's face it, the current dev random implementation always allows you to pop in new entropy, even updating the entropy estimate, for example, even from user space. Just do that. However, the kernel is not only focusing US customers. It needs to be working and accepted all over the world. And I just had to chat with DJ. The problem is, for example, with read-rand, it's hard for anybody to really assess and vet what the implementation is. I mean, I do not have a microscope to look into the chips. So, and therefore, yes, I think I trust DJ now, and I can certainly live with the assessment, okay, one bit of data is one bit of entropy. But there are other people outside in the world who says, no, it's a US product. I cannot fully trust it. That's why I just take, say, 1/8 or 16th bit of entropy per data bit or something like that. So, and that is what the Linux kernel currently does. It takes takes RDRAND, stirs it in at a special time, and awards it with one bit of entropy.
The most recent version sort of integrates it in like three different times. There's integration, and then whenever it's reading entropy out of the pool, and also whenever an interrupt is processed.
Only when the interrupt is processed. Only then RDRAND is really used in the current kernels.
RDSeed is also used on pool initialization. I can show you.
Okay, the pool initializations, yes, but that's only once during boot up time.
Sure.
And it is not awarded or credited with any kind of entropy. It's just there to mix the initial state.
Yes, I agree. It's not awarded with any entropy. But mm-hmm. I mean, if one did not hold the implementation as being dubious, then one could reasonably credit that as a fairly reasonable source of initialization.
I'm totally with you, but again, we are not living in a perfect world. People try to or assume that Intel is a US company and is not doing the right thing because of that. So that's the world we live in, unfortunately.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
without trying to persuade anybody either way about whether the OMG is any good in the Intel chip, I can say that if you're trying to get a product certified and you're trying mm-hmm. to use read-rand or read-c as your entropy source and to claim mm-hmm. entropy, a certain amount of entropy, the developer's guide tells you how to do that correctly, mm-hmm. but also we have entropy assessment documents or entropy justification documents. And if you need that, we can mm-hmm. provide it. It depends on what chip you're running on, because obviously the different processes have a different
sure.
Document associated with them.
And I think that's a very important.
But, that's available for your certification.
Thank you. And I think that is very important to be open about these entropy sources. But yet we are here where we are. So I can just tell you what the implementation is. Oh, sure.
Oh. The last bullet that you just had up there.
Okay. Do I have that? Yes.
Potential removal of ad disk randomness. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, I can. That's my... Okay. The issue is the following, and that is, you will find that issue description in that documentation around this LRNG. But the problem is the following, and that's the key problem. Actually, it's not the last bullet, removal of the ad disk randomness, but it's the last bullet that actually is the driver of why ad disk randomness should be removed. And that's the following. We have three noise sources, human interface devices, block devices, and these interrupts. If you look into the technical details, disk operations and human interface operations are triggered by interrupts. So therefore, if I get an event for disk operation, I also get an event for the interrupt noise source. So those two are highly correlated. The same applies to human interface devices and interrupts. They are highly correlated. And that's one of the key problems and the key issues that I currently see with the dev random implementations and the noise sources, that you have this correlation. I personally think this is one of the drivers why one interrupt is only credited 1/64th bit of entropy. Yeah. So when you receive one interrupt, you get the timestamp, and that timestamp is only credited 1/64th bit of entropy at most, even sometimes even less. And but human interface devices and disk devices are credited much more entropy comparatively. I think that is exactly because you have this correlation, this strange correlation. Now, when you come back to server type systems, or first of all, to newer systems, you have solid state disk. In those solid, when the system finds a solid state disk, it already deactivates the disk random, the add disk randomness noise source. So if you have a solid state disk, you will not collect any data, or the Linux dev random will not collect any data from this operation, first. Second, now assume you are in a server type environment that uses solid state disk and is headless. So all what you're left is with interrupts that are credited to 1/64th bit of entropy. Okay, you're starting to get entropy starved. It's just the way how you handle the data. I'm not saying that you really starve with entropy, it's just the way how it's processed. And that needs to change. And that is one of the reasons why the ad disk randomness is probably on its way out. Tetcho already hinted to that after discussions with him. And I would even assume, and at least that's my driver, to even remove the human interface device noise source as well.
To just be clear, it's not that you're removing the entropy source, you're removing the double dipping.
Exactly, because I mean, when you do an I/O, a disk I/O operation, you always get an interrupt, always.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks again, Stefan.
Thank you.